and welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Mike Hodson is bringing the teaching to you. So open up your Bibles and listen in.
How's it going, North Coast? Woo! All right. Hey, you might have come in and sat down and said, hey, what's going on with our backdrop? I thought we were in this Unstuck series. We are still getting unstuck, but we want to let you know that starting Monday, we're going to be kicking off a conference called Sticky Teams. And so what we do is we have about 800 pastors from all over the world come, share kind of their best practices. We have some other pastors coming in from around the world to speak and to teach and to train. And this is kind of our setup for that. So if you're thinking, wow, Mike just came in and he wanted his own backdrop. It's not true. It's not for me. I asked for that and they said, no, we'll give you this one instead. So, hey, if we've not met, my name is Mike Hodson. I've been on staff here for a number of years at the church. I work with young adults, 25 to 35 years old. And before that, I've done a bunch of little things around here. So you might know me, you might not know me, but hey, great to meet you. Come over, we'll do lunch. We won't tell my wife, just all of you show up. It'll be a good time. So I got to brag just a little bit. 4 years ago, my wife and I went on this little vacation, and this was right before we started our adoption process, and we figured, hey, this is going to be our last time we travel without kids, and so we're going to go get away, and we took about 7 or 8 days, and we went to a small island of Kauai in Hawaii, and it was an awesome time, and we kind of had this just mantra that kind of kept coming up over and over. Every time we would go to a spot or kind of check something out, one of us would look at the other and go, hey, we've got to come back here when we get our kids. We've got to come back here with family. And so 4 years later, we have finalized everything with our kids in the adoption process. And so just 2-3 weeks ago, we went back to Kauai as a Hodson family, and we just celebrated being there. And let me tell you something. Travel changes with kids. No, really, shocking. The spots my wife and I would walk hand in hand and watch the sun go down, the kids are like, boring, come on. The place we went and saw waterfalls in different places, like, oh, could we go swimming at the pool? And I'm like, really? They didn't care about all the cool things we saw. They were excited about chasing the wild chickens through the area. I'm like, seriously? Seriously. And so I just thought, hey, next time I go on a vacation, I'm going to send my kids to Ramona. There's swimming pools and wild chickens out there, and they can just go nuts. And mom and I will go do our thing. So it'll be awesome. It was an amazing time of watching. It was a lot of firsts for my kids. The first plane, first vacation, first time snorkeling, first time, you know, seeing a waterfall, on and on and on. And it was awesome watching them kind of experience this for the first time and just kind of like, oh my gosh, let's and they just get so overwhelmed and excited, and they would grab your arms like, hey, Dad, remember that time? I'm like, yeah, I remember that time because we're still doing that time. Like, hey, remember when we saw chickens? Yeah, the chicken's right there. We get this, kid. So they were just so excited. They were just overwhelmed, sensory overload and just excitement and all that. And it was a really cool trip. And I was really blessed to be a part of it. But if it was up to my kids, that trip would have never happened. See, my wife and I knew we were going to be doing this sometime. And so we started saving and started planning. And just about Easter this year, we got everything in a row and we started reserving spots and get plane tickets. And we were excited. We thought, how are we going to surprise our kids? And so Easter morning, what we did, instead of giving them a whole bunch of sugar, my kids don't need any extra sugar, we gave them these bags. And they opened up the bags and they pulled out snorkeling gear. My kids have never been snorkeling before. They don't know what this is. So they're kind of looking and they go, oh, where's the candy? Where's the chickens? What's going on? And so they were really bummed. Then I explained, hey, guys, what this means is we're going to be going to Hawaii. And we're going to use that and go swimming in the ocean and see fish. And I was expecting a celebration. And, Dad, you're awesome. We love Mom. Didn't happen. I went silent. And then DJ, my 11-year-old, he's kind of the voice of chaos or the voice of ridiculousness in my house. So he's looking at this, he goes, wait, Hawaii's an island. I said, yes, son, it is. Bingo. He says, we have to fly to an island. I said, yeah. He's like, what if the plane crashes and we die? Okay. A few seconds later, one of the other kids like, we saw Soul Surfer, the surfer movie where the girl loses her arm. That happened in Hawaii. Why are sharks going to eat us in Hawaii? I'm like, oh my gosh. Another kid chimes in that, hey, you know, islands are made out of volcanoes and we're going to explode and on and on and on. I was like, oh, you guys could take the joy out of anything, can't you? And so we sat them down and said, look, okay, we fly every day. You know, there are millions of people that fly around this world and they're safe. We've been, mom and I have been on plenty of planes. You're going to be fine. The island might have had a volcano on it years and years and years ago. It's fine. You're not going to explode. And kids, sharks, they only bite quiet kids. And so you guys are safe. So you don't worry about that. And I realized that even though we tried to explain this and build them up for a matter of months, they still were just so scared. Even getting onto the plane, the moment of, you know, we're walking down the little aisle, and they're just like, oh my gosh, are we going to survive? And just watching their fear kind of manifest, and, you know, they were about to miss this amazing trip and all these great memories and a whole lot of fun because they were worried about stuff that probably wouldn't happen, might possibly happen. They were just kind of a little illogical. And yet the moment we landed, all that went out the window and it was complete like exhale and we had a blast. And as I kind of watched this happen, as I tried to diffuse the situation for weeks, I just realized that, you know, there's nothing I can say. This fear, even though how unfounded and silly it is, this is really real fear for them. And I started to think about our own lives and kind of wondered, where is it that we let fear get the best of us? See, all of us have a relationship with fear. Now, some of us, we like dating fear. Some people invest a lot of money in jumping off high things, of just doing adrenaline sports, of, you know, I know Halloween's coming up and people spend all sorts of crazy money going to haunted houses to get scared. They love fear. Some, we're on a little bit more conservative side. We're like, hey, we don't want to do anything. We could just do the same thing over and over and over. Let's not get scared. And you're my favorite people because I love kind of walking up behind you like, hey, and just watching them freak out. So that's just me. That's my relationship with fear. I like sharing it with you. We all kind of have this different response to it. And I started thinking about my life. Okay, well, where is the fear, you know, even ridiculous or unfounded or any of this stuff, where does that kind of affect me? And I started thinking through, okay, my relationships, my finances, my home life, my, you know, on and on and on. And I kind of landed on the spot that I think fear kind of gets me the worst when it comes to my faith. And fear has this power of taking me out of an area of faith and landing me in this area of spirituality. Because there are times where I say, look, I love Jesus, I'm committed, I follow, I believe, I can memorize some verses, I'll say some prayers, I know this stuff, and I'm like, hey, I'm committed. But then when something goes sideways, that fear starts to kind of get to me and says, can you trust Jesus? Is this really what you believe? And then all these concepts that I claim go out the window and I try to kind of take care of things myself. You ever had that feeling where you're like, hey, yeah, I love Jesus. Ooh, I think I'm going to take care of this one myself, God. We all have those moments where it kind of takes away from faith. Now, faith, on the other hand, is not this concept. It's actually a response to a God we already know. We know who he is. We know the teachings. We know the claims. And so because of that, we are going to live out our actions by what we claim. And yet when it comes to these times of fear, it can really rock our faith. And so to kind of look at where this faith and this fear collide and how do we kind of wrestle with it and how do we get unstuck from fear and unstuck from a spirituality concept, how do we move into something that can be grounded and just rock solid in our faith? And so to do so, I want to look at a kind of a little scary story. Not so much for us, but if you put yourself in the mindset of the guys that are going through this, man, this would have been a really tough moment of fear and faith. This is what I want you to do. Open up your Bibles. We are in the book of Matthew chapter 14. We're looking at the very end of the chapter there. It's Matthew 14. We're going to be starting in verse 22. And as you're kind of flipping pages, it's about halfway through your book. Look for the books of the names, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. If you don't know where that is, you can probably just open it and flip until you find it. It's a pretty easy find. Or just look on with a neighbor. If you have your app, you can look that up. Or you can really creep someone out and just lean in front of them right quick. Be like, thank you for sharing. As you're getting there, let me kind of set this up. Jesus' ministry is going off right now. He has done his miracles. He's done teachings. He's done some amazing things. He has a great reputation around his area. And so people are coming from all over the place with different belief systems, different problems. They want to be around where Jesus is. Right now, Jesus just heard some horrible news. A relative, a close friend, a partner in his ministry had just been put to death. And so with this horrible news, he turns to his disciples and says, guys, I need to get some alone time. I need some time to prayer, some time to pray, to just get right and spend with God. So could we kind of go somewhere a little secluded and get alone? And the disciples are like, yeah, sweet, let's get in the boat. We'll kind of float around. We'll find you a nice spot to get away. At that point, he gets away. But again, the crowds love Jesus. They want to be around him. So they see where he's floating, and thousands of people run around the corner and kind of follow the coastline and meet Jesus before he gets off the boat. Right there, the disciples are like, hey, just send them away. We'll take care of this. And Jesus has compassion on them and says, no. They've come all this way. Let's take care of them. And so with a couple loaves of bread and a couple fishes, he feeds 5,000. You've probably heard of the miracle before. And with that, after the miracle, he says, okay, crowd, go away. Hey, good seeing you. Disciples, you can take off in the boat. I need my time to go pray. And so after some rough news, after a great miracle, after a long day doing ministry, we find Jesus and the disciples at the end of chapter 14, starting in verse 22. It says, immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After he had dismissed them, he went up on the mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Buffeted. It's a fun word to say. So Jesus says, hey, guys, take off, get in the boat, go. I'm going to dismiss the crowds. I'm going to go take my time, and I'm going to go pray. Things are going good so far. But as Jesus is up on the mountain, he can look down and see that the storms are starting to get there. Now, a couple things we kind of need to know about this little area and a couple things we need to know about this story. First off, this is home turf for these guys. What I mean by that is some of the disciples, the guys in the boat right now, they grew up on this water. Their parents were fishermen. Their grandparents were fishermen. These guys went out and they fished there themselves. They learned how to skip stones across the water. They went swimming there. They had fun there. If they weren't fishermen themselves, a lot of them worked in the community, and so they were out on that water all the time. So since they knew this area, they knew the secret spots to get away to, you know, kind of get Jesus some secluded area, but they also knew where the far distances were. They knew where the good fishing area was. They know where it would kind of get shallow at times. They also knew that to travel by night was not a very good thing. See, when night comes up to the north of the body of water, you had these mountains, and when the temperature would change, the air would come billowing through there and just blow up this water. It would go from nice glassy into white caps really quick. And so for these guys to travel at night, they're thinking, ah, we'll trust you, Jesus, but this is going to be a rocky ride. They knew as soon as the water comes, or as soon as the air hits the water, it starts to shift and the boat starts to shimmy, and it's not going well. But this is home turf, so they've been trained on how to deal with this. So they're out in the water doing their thing. The second thing we've got to realize is this really isn't that big of a spot. I don't know about you, but growing up and reading Bible stories or seeing pictures or whatnot or some of the cartoons, the Sea of Galilee was giant. I was like, oh my gosh. Earlier this year, because of the generosity of a lot of you here at North Coast, there was myself and about 13 other pastors that were able to go and stand on the shore of Galilee. We were able to go to Israel and see a lot of the spots that Jesus taught from and just some of the things. And it was amazing. It was just life-changing, and it totally changed my perspective. On day two, we pulled up and we got off our buses, and we're standing there at this hotel on the Sea of Galilee. And I remember standing on the shore, kind of, you know, putting my toes in the sand and kind of looking out at the water, thinking, oh my gosh, this is so small. That's it, huh? This big body of water that I had these, you know, imaginary, you know, concepts of, it's only about 13 miles long and only about 7 miles wide. In one day, we kind of took, I wouldn't even say a motorboat, kind of a putter boat, and we putted from one side to the other in about a half hour. It wasn't that big. And for these guys to get sent in there and to be not too far off shore, but far enough off, but not across the other side yet, they had been working hard against this area. Third thing we need to realize when, okay, they know the area, they know it's not that big, they know how to get from side A to side B, we also got to realize this is not the first time Jesus sent them into a storm. Earlier in the book of Matthew, maybe you remember the story. They go out at night and they're kind of going from one side to the other. Jesus goes and takes a nap in the bottom of the boat, and it's getting rocked and it's getting tossed and all that. And they grab Jesus and they wake him up and say, aren't you worried that we're going to die? Don't you care? And it's that moment where Jesus stands up, calms the storm, says, shh, and looks back at the guy and goes, guys, what were you so worried about? And he sits back down. They've been sent into the storm before. They know the area. They know the boats. They know what to do. But at the same time, Jesus isn't in the boat this time. He said, go on ahead before me. I'm going to wait right here. And so now they're in the storm. They're doing everything they possibly can, everything they've been trained to do, and it's still not working. So let's see how this goes. Verse 25. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. While the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. So they've been out there a while. It says that he sent them out before nightfall. But it says during the fourth watch, that's about between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So these guys have been out fighting the water for about 12 hours now. And it says they're not that far off. Remember, it's 7 miles wide. If you can't cross that in 12 hours, it's got to be rough seas. And they have been fighting and fighting and fighting. They're trying to get there. And then they look up. I don't know if it's exhaustion. I don't know if it's just sheer insanity. I don't know what's going on. But they look up and there's Jesus cruising across the water. There's something you don't see every day. But they look up. They say, it must be a ghost. Because this doesn't happen on your normal day. And so they are freaked out. And so Jesus knows they're terrified because they're storm. He knows they're terrified because they're looking at him and they think this isn't normal. So the first thing he says, hey guys, don't be afraid. It's amazing how many times something supernatural happens in the Bible and the first response is, don't be afraid. Normally that means they were scared. I'm sure if we were out hanging out at the beach and we're out surfing or swimming, I don't surf, let's be real. Let's say we're out there swimming, whatever, and somebody walks by on the water, we'd be freaked out, okay? So I totally get that. And you see, okay, great, there's this storm, but there's Jesus, there's this moment, this isn't normal. He says, don't be afraid. So how do you respond in this time? What would you do in this moment? I tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't be Peter. But Jesus said immediately, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. I'm thinking that's not my response. Remember, they were in the same area, same storm, same all. This is real familiar. And what do? They wake up Jesus the first time, he calms the storm. I think my response is, Jesus, can you save us? Not, hey, dude, call me out right now. Dare me. Come on. No. But he says, hey, if it's you, Jesus, call me out and I'll do this. And instantly he jumps out and goes. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know if the other guys dared him to. I don't know if it's just Peter and he doesn't make that great of decisions. I don't know what this, the setup is. But we see that Jesus says, yes, it's me. Come on out. And he does. And from there, some things happen. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why don't you doubt? He gets out of the boat. He's excited. He is walking towards Jesus. But just like you and I in our lives, plenty of time, we have this focus on Jesus. But then we see the wind, we see the storm, we see the chaos, we see what's going on. And all of a sudden we start to sink. Thing I want to point out here, it doesn't say splash, he fell in the water. It says he began to sink. So he's out there, he's actually walking on water. He's still upright, but he starts to go down a bit. And some people, I've heard this story told and taught that, man, Peter was, you know, and they say all these things about him. But look at how he responded. He doesn't turn back to the boat. He doesn't yell to his fishermen friends, throw me a line. He doesn't say, hey, you know, let's kind of see if we can make it back. Even in the middle of sinking, he turns and looks at Jesus and says, Jesus, help. I don't know if Jesus was right there and reached out a hand or if poof from one spot to another spot, he shows up and pulls him out. But he says, immediately Jesus was there and pulled him out. And I just have this picture of Jesus pulling Peter out and just holding him and walking to the rest of the way to the boat. And I'm sure there's this little dialogue back and forth. And I'm sure Peter's thinking, man, that was crazy. That was intense. You see how much I follow you. And Jesus says, no, you didn't have enough faith. And they get back in the boat. See, even in our moments of doubt, Jesus is still right there. Jesus still gets us back into the boat. And let's just kind of finish this up. Verse 32. And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Catch this. Verse 33. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." It took them another moment of this miraculous sign for them to say, "Truly you are." Do you think Peter got out because he knew something these guys had to come to their own? Maybe Peter already had a great understanding of who Jesus was, so for him to get out of the boat was easier. It's a moment where we look at and say, man, that is some crazy stuff. I'd never be there. I don't know how many of us are going to go to the Sea of Galilee, and if so, I don't know how many are going to step out of the boat. If that's your thing, great. Bring waders. You might float some. But I do know that all of us have these different areas in our lives where we can say, hey, you know what? I trust Jesus and things are going great. But then we get the call from the doctor and it's a diagnosis. We hear from family that so-and-so isn't doing so good. We get into another fight with the spouse or the kids. We look at our finance, say, how are we going to make it this week? And we could go on and on and on and on about the different things where our storms come and rock us. And we come to a point where we realize, okay, I have faith, but I also have fear. So how am I going to deal with this? So looking at a little story and saying, okay, well, what can we learn from how Jesus dealt with people then is how he's dealing with people now. What can we learn and apply this to us? And looking at Peter trying to walk on water and fall down and kind of getting stuck in some fear. First couple things that I want to talk about. That our faith can be impacted by our boat and by the storm. Our faith can definitely be impacted by the boat and by the storm. When I think about following Jesus, I got to admit, it's probably the easiest thing I've ever done. You know what I mean? No doubts, no insecurities, no what ifs. It's easy. And since I follow Jesus, my wife and I have always been on the same page. My kids, they love me and respect me and cheer my name when I walk down the hall. My job is easy, and everything around here is just smooth. My Raiders, they win every week. It's a bye week. They can't lose today, all right? All right, all right. No, but reality, let's get real about this. Even following Jesus, I can't say every day my wife and I see eye to eye. I definitely can tell you my kids don't cheer my name. I'm lucky I have four kids, so at least one mathematically would like me. The other three, they might be mad at me, but at least one a day. You know, I'm all right. Work, I love what I do and I love who I do it with, but sometimes even the best of us, don't we get a little sideways and just gets crazy at work, you know what I mean? I'm not even going to talk about sports. I don't think Jesus blesses that team anyway, so it's all right. But in life, we have these moments where we say, hey, look, everything's good. It's so easy to follow Jesus when things are going our way. When it's a sunshiny day and we're being blessed and it's awesome. But when things get sideways and it gets a little tough, that's where we get to a moment where we say, ooh, I don't know. And we kind of need to make a decision. Are we going to trust in God at this moment? Or are we going to trust in what we know? In our securities, in the things that we've gone to, and the things that we lean on. See, here are some fishermen and sailors. They get sent into a boat. They get sent into a storm. And so what do? They instantly do everything they've known, everything they've been trained to do, and they fight the storm in their boat. They thought that, you know what? This is going to be a safe spot for us. This is where we find our security. This is where we have, find our identity. This is what we're going to do. And I think at times we do the same things. We go back to the things we say, hey, this is our boat. When life starts to go, we go to the things that we call identity, the things that make us feel secure about ourselves. Maybe it's our finance, maybe it's our hobbies, maybe it's our jobs, maybe it's our education, maybe it's our relationships. I don't know what it is. They're not bad things, but those are the things that we find identity in. And so when things start to rumble, we think, I got a big enough boat, I can weather the storm, I'm good. But what if the storm gets too big and our boat's not big enough? Peter was holding on in the middle of this boat thinking, okay, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. He's been getting tossed and turned for 12 hours. And he starts to realize, I don't know if my boat is big enough for this storm. Over at the Sea of Galilee, right on the, I believe it's the east shore of the Sea of Galilee, they have a little museum. It's called the Jesus Boat Museum. It's not Jesus's boat, but they found a boat buried in the mud that that they think is about the same age and the same timeline as when Jesus was walking on water and doing his thing. And the thing that blew me away is these boats were not that big. They're about 27 feet long, about 6-7 feet wide, maybe 8 at the widest. And the sides were only about 4 feet tall. And these are the boats that they were going out fishing. It wasn't a boat that you could fit 12 guys in comfortably. I don't know if in this story they have multiple boats out there, but it's not a big boat. But it is big enough that a little bit of a storm you can deal with. But a huge storm, you start to look at each other going, I don't know if this is going to work. And so it got me thinking, why do you think Peter jumped out of that boat? I think it's because Jesus was no longer with them in that boat. And sometimes you get this place where your security, your identity, all the things that you think you can weather a storm with start to fail, start to fall apart, and start to crack. And you need to make a decision. Is it going to be this or is it going to be God? And he says, hey, if it's you, call me out because I would rather be with you in a storm than in this boat that's going to sink without you. And so he says, yes, it's me. Come on out. And he jumps out in this moment of, we would call it just insanity or just kind of odd response. And yet he goes towards Jesus in this. And I think at times we think we can hold on to our security so much before we say, okay, God, I am sinking. I am dying. Now I'll give it to you. Where at the beginning of the point, we could say, hey, even in this fear, I can say, God, I trust you in this and let's go. I want to look at what God might be doing in your storm. Keep something here in the book of Matthew. We're going to be coming back to it. But turn over a little bit to the right. We're looking for the book of James. It's written by Jesus' half-brother. He might even be in the boat with them at this time. Okay? So flip over to the back of the book. It's probably the last 5/6 of the book. It's right after Hebrews, right before Peter. Flip it on the app, you're good. Turn with a neighbor, however it works. And here's a guy who walked with Jesus. Here's a guy who knew Jesus. Like I said, he was probably in the boat in the storm with Jesus. Here's a guy who experienced a lot. And he says, look, guys, I think there are times we hold on to our security and we think, hey, faith is just going to happen. But he says, there's something going on in the storms, something going on when we think there's nothing else we can do. And there's something happening in that time. James chapter 1, right at the very beginning there, verse 2. It says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that in the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. He says, guys, at times in the storms, you're going to be tested. And if you are tested, that is going to develop something more in you. And I think it's in that testing that God develops something in us that we now get to live out on our daily. See, it's the storms that kind of see what we're made of. And I'm not going to say Jesus sends you into storms and it's, hey, Jesus' fault, everything's falling apart. But he says in those times, it's going to test your faith. And how you respond to that, God can develop into that something more, make you stronger, make your faith deeper. And he says he can use that. But so many times we think, I don't want extra faith. I want extra security. I want to have a safer boat, God. I want to have a smaller storm, God, not a bigger faith, God. And so God says, no, look, if you call to me in the middle of your storm, I've got you. But if you depend on your boat, if you depend on the security, if you depend on the thing that you think is going to get you through, well, I'll be right here. But good luck on that one. And there are times where our faith is totally affected by the size of our boat, the comfort of our boat, or the size of our storm. But good thing it does not stop there. I love the fact that Peter knew there was something going on, and if he gets out of the boat, he has a better chance of survival. And I love that Peter did it, because I don't know if you know much about Peter, if you've read about Peter, or if you've heard people teach about Peter. Peter's kind of a man's man. He's a regular guy. He's a working class guy that, you know, he says things he probably shouldn't. He pops off when he should, and he doesn't understand a whole lot of stuff. But I love the fact that Peter does this, because it shows me that, hey, in my time of stress and struggle, I might react weird. I might do some things that I don't understand. And I bet you the rest of us are looking at this, or especially the guys in the boat at the time, thought, this guy is crazy. Now, Peter's been called a lot of things, but I don't think he's crazy, because I think he understands something that we might not understand yet. The second thing is this. Faith isn't being crazy. It's being called. Faith isn't crazy. It's just being called to do the right thing. See, Peter does something that really gives us the setup to understand what faith really should look like. But at times, I think we blow faith out of proportion. We look at somebody's testimony or somebody's story and we kind of make it something bigger. We think, man, I could never live like that. I can never have that sort of faith. Think, man, that's some crazy faith. You know what I mean? I've heard stories where people have sold everything they own and they've gone to a country that I can't even find on a map or pronounce. And they say, man, that's crazy faith. I'm going to go with that. I know people who've gotten sick and said, you know what? I'm just going to trust in God. I'm not going to go to a doctor. I'm not even going to get this checked out. It's crazy faith. I know people who said, you know what? I'm not going to plan my future. I'm just going to wait for Jesus to show up and lead me to where I need to go. It's crazy faith. I think in some of those situations, that's just crazy. Okay? There's no faith about it. Yet, at the same time, I think some of those situations, that is all faith, and there is nothing crazy about it. I want you to get back into Matthew, and I want you to look at exactly what Peter did and exactly why Peter did it. Matthew 14, looking at verse 28. Peter speaking, he says, Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. He gives us something very simple. He says, is this God? Jesus, is it you? Yes, it's God. Okay, then call me out and I'll respond to you. Okay, great, come. And then he responds. See, Peter knew that our faith is relationship, and it's based upon the response to something that God has already done. You know what I mean? It's not jumping out of a boat and not thinking about it. It's saying, okay, is God in this? Okay, God, then show me or lead me or guide me in this. And if you're in this, God, I'm going to respond. No hesitation. And so many times Jesus has taught and told people, look, if you love me, obey me. If you want to come after me, you must deny yourself and follow me. He talks about picking up your cross and laying down your own life and following me. He doesn't say, hey, say a little prayer, go to church. He says, no, follow me, respond to me. And so what Peter shows us is that response is what faith is all about. It's not being crazy. It's being called into action. I think about friends who have sold everything they own in the States, who are on the mission field, who are raising their kids in foreign countries because of their relationship with God, because of the prayer, because of seeking the Lord and wisdom. That is where God has called them. It's not crazy. They were called. I know people who have invested in missionaries or in different ministries financially where their family says, you're an idiot. What are you doing? Don't give them your money. And they say, no, because we've prayed. We've sought God on this. You know, we've opened up his word. We've really looked for wise counsel on how to do this. And so they've invested. And they would say, hey, it's the greatest thing we've ever done. Because they're crazy? No, because they're called. I know friends with just some crazy faith that after praying, after reading the Bible, after seeking wise counsel, they have volunteered to push a stroller around with crying kids around this campus. Crazy faith. Because that's where God called them. See, sometimes we look at the miracles and the big side and say, man, I can't do that. Not if God doesn't call you to do that. But sometimes God calls just to be faithful in little things. Hey, we're going to help out our neighbor. Hey, we're going to do these things. It's simply responding to who he is. And our response comes directly out of our relationship with him. You have been called to do some things. I guarantee all of us have been called to do something. But are we responding? Or are we simply saying, that's too crazy, that doesn't have my name on it? Now, if you're sitting here thinking, well, how do I know? This isn't on your note sheet, but just kind of write this down on the side here. If you're wondering, how do I know if I'm called? How do I know if this has my name on it? First, God's word, God's Bible. Everything that you're called to do will line up with his teachings. If it does not line up with his teachings, if it's not, you know, supported by the truth, then it's crazy. Do not do it. Get into his word. Second, you've got to talk to God. That's going to be your prayer time. Not just pray, but listen. You know, we get this great example of Peter saying, Peter, or Jesus, if it's you, call me and I'll respond. He doesn't just say, Jesus, and jumps. No, he stops and he listens. He waits for a response. And third, you got to get surrounded by other godly people. And there's a huge, huge difference between friends and godly people. I have friends that I love, but their greatest advice would be, hey, let's cut the top off your van and jump it through a flaming hoop, you know? Those aren't people I ask about my relationship with my kids or my wife or my faith. They're good time guys. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But then there are other people that I'll say, hey guys, here's something I'm thinking about. And they'd say, well, how does this line up with the teachings of Christ? How does this affect your wife? How does this affect your kids? How does this affect your ministry? And they're going to give me advice and really talk to me through that. Because sometimes it's not clear. It's not a flash of light and a sign in the sky, but it's, okay, I've prayed about this. I've read God's word about this. I've sought wise counsel about this. So I'm being called, so I got to respond. And it's very simple. It's not insane. Just response. But sometimes we get called. Sometimes we have that moment where we know what to do, but that fear is still very, very strong. Is it wrong to be afraid? Do you think when Peter jumped out of that boat, he was still afraid? Yeah. He looked at the water and he looked at the storm and he started to sink. That's why point number three is this. Faith isn't the absence of fear. It's obedience despite the fear. Faith is not saying, hey, I'm not afraid of any of this, but it's responding even though you are afraid. We're all afraid of something. But does that fear stop you? I can think of time and time and time again some of the fears in my life that if I would have stopped, man, it would have been a bad situation. I'm a shy guy at heart. I remember sitting down next to this girl 13, 14 years ago. Thought she was cute. She had this killer smile, and I was so scared to talk to her. She's my wife, and I have four kids because the fear didn't stop me. I have family who have gone to medical procedures that sounded so scary, and they were like, I don't know if I want to do this. But the fear did not stop them. They're healthy and living today. There are times that fear should not stop you. I think of all the times that Jesus has called people to respond. I think of all of our heroes in the Old Testament. A guy like David, he's a little kid delivering sandwiches to his older brothers. He sees this big old giant, and he says, okay, hey, I'm going to fight this guy. Think he's scared? Yeah. But he says, look, I know what God has done in my past, and so I know what I'm going to do right now. It's Daniel, a guy that goes to prayer, and they say, hey, if you pray, we're going to throw you in with the lions. He goes, all right, that's fine. I'm going to go be faithful to God. He does, he gets thrown in the lions, and he's fine. My favorite response in all the Bible is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Three guys that are told, hey, you need to sit down and worship this altar. And they say, no, we will not. He said, our God will save us. But if he doesn't, we're still going to be obedient. These guys knew what fear was, but they also knew what faith was. And so for us, even when we get a little nervous going, oh, I don't know, we got to be able to lean in that and say, hey, look, that's not going to stop me. Now, I love sharing those big, crazy stories. The fact of the matter is a lot of us aren't going to be forced to worship idols or things like that. But one of the easiest, simplest, but very clear and proud moments that I could share with you comes from my own life, and it's not me, so I'm not going to brag about anything. About 6 months ago, I sit down with my 15-year-old son. 15-year-old, he's a junior in high school, and he lives on his phone. I'm in between texting, social media, Instagramming, games, music, talking. I mean, he lives with that thing. He had done something, I don't even remember what, but you know, our biggest discipline for him is, all right, we're going to take your phone, bud. We tried doing so many other things, it didn't bother him, but his phone, like, all right, we found a weak spot, we got him. So I confiscate his phone. And it's been a couple weeks, and I'm thinking, okay, it's about time I give it back to him. And so we sit down, we have a father-to-son talk based on chicken wings, where I think every dad has to have a meal talk, you know what I mean? So we sit down, and we're talking, I say, hey, son, what are we going to do about your phone? And he goes quiet, and he keeps eating, he's looking down at his bowl of wings, and he goes, I don't know if I want it back right now, I don't think I need it. And I was shocked. I was kind of scared. I was like, are you okay? Do we need to rush you anywhere? We got something. I said, well, okay, let's talk about that. See, over this time, he had been talking to his small group leader and his youth pastor about kind of the distractions in life and the things that have been pulling him away from not just following God, but just having healthy relationships and whatnot. And so he looks at me and goes, yeah, I just don't want it right now. I know I text too much. I end up playing too many games. This isn't a good time. And I think that if you kept it, it would keep me out of trouble. I thought, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And I said, well, aren't you worried you're going to miss out? I mean, your friends don't even call. They just text. Everything is back and forth like that. So aren't you afraid you're going to miss out on, you know, some of the things your friends are doing over summer? Aren't you going to miss out on maybe some of your football plans? I mean, what? And he's like, yeah, I know I'll miss some things, but yeah, I'll miss them. Sorry, because this is what I got to do. And I remember the conversation just being so impressed, thinking, man, I don't know if I'd be willing to do that, to give up my lifeline to all my friends and family and my little culture and say, this is okay because I need to focus on stuff. And yet it hit me that that's what faith is, you know, knowing that, okay, I got something in between me and God or in between me and in a healthy relationship, whatever it is. And I'm willing to let that go because this is what I need to focus on. It convicted me and just kind of thinking, man, that's crazy. A couple weeks go by, I'm out at a park playing with my kids and they're out playing basketball and on the swings and I'm getting texts and Facebook messages and I'm thinking I'm important and doing these different things. And I look up and my 11-year-old is playing a pickup game of basketball with a whole other family. And I'm like, that's weird. And my daughter, who loves doing gymnastics, is nowhere to be found. I'm like, what in the heck? She's like, I met this other girl and she showed me how to do backflips. Oh, yeah, great. Okay. So I got to find my kids and see they're okay. But it hit me that I was like, my son, 15 years old, willing to give stuff up, and yet I'm kind of wired into this. So I deleted a bunch of stuff off my phone. And so if you need to get a hold of me, it's not going to be through social media. So just one of those things where I'm like, man, I'm willing to do this. And it just hit me, how many of us are willing to do something like that where, hey, you know, we got these little things, not major things, but stuff that we're not willing to let go of. We're not willing to respond to because we're afraid we're going to miss out on an update. We're afraid we're going to miss out on something real important. We're afraid that just things change. We don't like change. We just, let's keep it the way it is. Maybe some of us are afraid of going home and erasing a browser history and confessing, hey, look, I struggle with some things. Maybe some of us are afraid about turning to a friend on the way home and saying, hey, this is what I'm going through. Will you pray for me in this? You know, there are these little things that scare us and we think that, man, worst case scenario, I can't deal with that. Let's not do that. And yet God says, no, that's where faith shows up. You know, is it spirituality where it's some concepts and ideas, or is it really faith and it's just a response from what you already know? I think when fear shows up, that's a real true test of faith. We're thinking, okay, what do I do now? It's simply responding. It's not trusting in the boat or trusting in the storm. It's not thinking, hey, this is crazy, but it's responding out of relationship. And it's simply saying, hey, yeah, I'm afraid. I'm a little uncomfortable, but I'm going to do it anyway. And this is where I go with that. It's a very simple, it's response. But for some of us, we're thinking, okay, great, I'm in, I want to do this, but how do I respond? Whatever the steps do I take? Where do I go? So not on your note sheets, but just kind of write this down. And this is kind of what I was thinking, like, you know what, if we're going to leave here, where do we get going? It's not just an idea, but how do we apply this? Where does the rubber meet the road? How do we do this? So right there under taking it home, first thing that I could tell you is a little faith is still faith. A little faith is still faith. That little bit of faith, it's still trusting in Jesus. That little bit of faith with God can do big things. In Matthew chapter 17, Jesus is talking to his disciples and he says, guys, you still don't get it. He says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, just the itty bitty mustard seed, you can say to a mountain, hey, move from here to there. Time and time again, he says, guys, you don't have a lot of faith. But even himself says, guys, with faith, you can do amazing things. So don't think you need to go home and bulldoze everything and conquer the world. You need to say, okay, I got a little bit of faith in this. Still got a whole lot of fear, still got a big old storm, but I got a little bit of faith. Okay, I'm going to hold on to what I know. And in that faith, I'm going to respond. And the second thing is this. Even small steps count. I got my little bit of faith. I'm going to go home and do this one thing. I'm going to open my Bible today. I'm going to read a verse. Boom. Hey, I'm already in there a couple verses a day. I'm going to read a chapter. I'm going to do whatever. Hey, I'm going to commit to prayer. Hey, I'm going to go confess to my friend that, hey, this is what I'm struggling with. The little bits. It's this faith of a mustard seed and the willingness to respond to a God that we already know, that we already have a relationship. That's all he's asking. He didn't say, hey guys, get out of the boat. But Peter said, God, if that's you, I want to get out of the boat and be where you are. If we're following Jesus, it's because we've asked to be a part of what he's doing. So now we respond by saying, okay, with the little bit of faith I have and the little bit of steps I'm going to take, I'm going to commit to following you. Even in fear, even in insecurity, even in doubt, I've got you because I know who you are and I know what you've done in the past. And I can't wait to see what you do with my future. Fear and faith are going to collide. Do not let fear get you stuck. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you so much that you are a God that breaks down barriers, that gets us unstuck from things, that you are a God of second, third, and fourth chances. God, I thank you so much that you desire a relationship with us, even though we're knuckleheads doing things wrong at times. But Lord, we thank you for your teaching and for your example and for your word. And Lord, may we be people who respond with little bits of faith and little steps and looking at a very big God and saying, okay, I can do this because of who you are. We love you, Lord, in your name we pray. Amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, please go online to www.northcoastchurch.com or you can see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Mike Hodson.
Before we take off, just kind of a final word of advice. We put trust in our boats, things of security. Boats sink. And we have a God that walks on top of the deepest of waters. So hopefully when we get in that point of fear, we know where we should put our trust. In a God that responds to our prayers, and we respond to him, or is this thing that can end up at the bottom of the river? So anyway, have a great week. We will see you next time. And turn and greet somebody. Maybe some high fives. So love you guys. See you later.